Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
What does it take to be the number one pick in the NFL draft? It's the ultimate football lottery, a selection that can build a dynasty like the 70s Steelers with Terry Bradshaw or deliver a surgical legend like Peyton Manning. But for every Bruce Smith who racks up a record 200 sacks, there's a cautionary tale that changed the franchise forever. Today we're looking at the true titans of the top spot and the incredible pressure of being a face of a franchise and a league. Welcome to the Pigpen. You're just in time for Pigskin Dispatch's final finale of looking at the history of the NFL draft and the draft pick number one. Ed Cleese, our guest, joins us once again. We are down to the wire. Our countdown is at its end. Pick number one is up today because we are one day away from the NFL draft. I am joined, as always, by our friend Ed Cleese. Ed, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren, I see you're smiling today. Is that because we've finally come to the end and the draft is, we're at the draft? Or are you smiling because you don't have to see me every day anymore?
All of the above, Ed, all of the above. Maybe, maybe the last one is maybe even the most important stuff.
Fair enough.
All right, so what can you tell me, what's your take on the history of the number one overall pick?
So I've got a lot to say, but I would say that the first thing that sticks out to me is that this is where history shifts, because, you know, if you have the number one pick, it generally means you stink, right? You've had a terrible year the year before. There have been some exceptions with trades and whatnot, but for the most part, you're bad. You get the first pick. And the difference between getting it right, getting it wrong, or getting it in between is it's earth-shattering, shaking, earth shifting. And just like 2024, 2 years ago, it's just kind of an example. And we don't know these answers yet. But, you know, the Bears take Caleb number one. The Commanders take JD 5-2. And the Patriots take May 3. That will shape history for all three of those organizations. Because what would happen if the Bears took May 1 and then, you know, Caleb went 2 to the Commander, you know. So these decisions that are made with the first pick have so much of it rolls down to the rest of the draft, sets the tone for the draft, and we have really run the gamut of results throughout history. And so I wanted to figure out a way to try to, how do I figure this out? I didn't want to talk about all 45 players that have been taken since 1980, but I wanted to figure out some sort of category, some way to do this. So here's what I came up with. I omitted the guys taken since 2020 because I just don't feel that that's enough of a sample yet to know. So from Joe Burrow on, I eliminated. And then I have one omission from the other 40 picks, and that was Bo Jackson. He was taken in 1986 by the Bucks first overall. You know, he never played for them because of baseball. Then he came to the Raiders. We all saw that he was going to be historically good, was in and out of the league. So a weird case, I omitted him. So that left us with 39 years of number one picks that I felt we could judge. I came up with 7 categories, and I gave them each a number. So I came up with Hall of Fame plus. That means this guy's in the Hall of Fame, and he's at the top of the Hall of Fame. Those players got a 7. If you just made the Hall of Fame, you got a 6. If you were near the Hall of Fame, you got a 5. If you were good, you got a 4. If you were average, you got a 3. If you were below average but not totally a bust, you got a 2. And then if you were a total bust, you got a 1 on the scale. So I added those all up. I had, you know, X amount of players in each category. And my average score was at 3.8. So just between average and good. What surprised me, Darren, was I only had five guys in my total bust category, and I only had four in my Hall of Fame plus category. So my like top five lists were actually kind of easy, and there was just a big middle ground. But wow, when I looked at it, of course, you know, I had the most players. Most players were in the good category, the four-point category. I had 10 there. And then I had eight in the average, and I had six in the near Hall of Fame. So the majority have wound up in that, like, middle
group. A pretty balanced spectrum you have there.
Yeah, it was pretty balanced. It didn't have the extremes I was expecting.
Okay. All right. Well, let's hear the, I guess if this is the good, the bad, and the ugly, let's hear the ugly.
I do. We'll do the ugly in just a second. I did have two guys that I struggled with. Vinny Testaverde and Jeff George, because they were both busts for the team that took them. Okay. They were busts. They did terribly poorly for the teams that drafted them, but they actually wound up having pretty good careers. So I wasn't sure how to chart that. So I just kind of put them in the average category.
They were the kings of the 1 and 2 year contracts. They're definitely journeyman quarterbacks.
Right. I just couldn't quite figure that out. So I just kind of put them in the middle. But we did have some busts, and we'll go through them here. Number five for me, I had Andre Bruce, a linebacker taken in 1988 by the Falcons. He did play 11 years, so that's a little not bust-like. So including 7 years to end his career with the Raiders after four disappointing years in Atlanta. But he only had seven starts in those 7 seasons with the Raiders. So he started a couple years for the Falcons and then became like back into the bench special teams type role player. And obviously nowhere near an impact that you want from the first pick in the draft.
Yeah. Didn't have the best of careers, probably hope for a little bit more.
Yeah.
So who'd you have after him?
We're going to stay on defense. Number four was taken in 2000, was defensive end Courtney Brown by the Browns. 6 years, he played five in Cleveland. He had one in Denver. 19 career sacks. He didn't have a whole lot of tackles either, so it wasn't like he was great against the run or anything. Just not a very good player.
Yeah, for the dominant career he had at Penn State in his senior year, it's really shocking that he didn't have a better career, NFL career.
Yep. So let's stick with that theme, because number three is Kejana Carter, taken in 1995, running back by the Bengals. A little bit unfortunate. On his third carry of his first preseason game with the Bengals, I remember this. I remember I'd seen it on SportsCenter against the Lions. I'm almost sure it was against the Lions. He tore his ACL at a time when that was a little more devastating than it is now, especially for a running back. And then the guy just could, when he came back, he missed his whole rookie year. And then when he came back, he just kept getting hurt. He had 1,100 career yards, so barely 1,000 yards in his career. His best season was 464 yards, totally marred by injuries. Maybe he would have been okay. We don't know, but, you know, it just never worked out for Kejana.
Yeah, very unfortunate career he had in the NFL. All right, who's next?
Number two was a big dude. I remember this guy. I remember this guy very well. It was 1992, drafted out of the University of Washington, was Steve Entman, defensive lineman. He was taken by the Colts. Almost like the offensive version of Tony Mandrich, the defensive version of Tony Mandrich almost, very similar. He had 19 career starts. That's not very many. 8 career sacks. He had 3 years with the Colts, 2 with the Dolphins. He actually played 1 year with the Redskins. I barely remember that. He had a lot of injuries too. He did have one memorable highlight, and I would encourage you and everybody else to go down the YouTube rabbit hole that I like to talk about. In his rookie year, they were playing the Dolphins. They had like a 4-point, the Colts had a 4-point lead, and Marino had the ball at the 8-yard line, 4th and goal with 17 seconds left. So the game's on the line. And it's a late afternoon Sunday game, so it's dark already. Charlie Jones is on the call, so it'll give you a little bit of those old nostalgic feels. And Marino drops back to pass. Entman jumps up and intercepts it and runs it 90 yards for a touchdown on the final play of the game to seal the game. It's a really cool, like, something to go back and watch. It's so crazy. So he has this one nice highlight memory. He got injured a lot. He was out of the league quickly. If you kind of read between the lines, like, I don't really think, unlike Kijana, who may have been because of injuries, it kind of sounds like his was just in addition to injuries. Like, he wasn't really working out very well.
Yeah, sometimes you're just not a good fit on the team and scheme you're in. So maybe that's the case for him. All right. So we have any honorable mentions?
Well, we need a number one.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, sorry. Yeah, who's our number one bust?
The number one bust taken number one of all time was not difficult. That is in 2007, the Raiders taking Jamarcus Russell. That was bad. He had a 7-18 career record, an 18-23 touchdown interception ratio. The big thing about him was he was one of those, like, I'm not sure how you miss it, because tons of conditioning issues, tons of weight issues in his career, tons of, does this guy want to be here? Does he care about football at all issues? Al Davis would later admit this. Lane Kiffin was the coach at the time. Kiffin did not want Russell. He tried to talk Davis out of it. Davis didn't listen. He wanted to draft Calvin Johnson, apparently. Kiffin did. So it did not go well for Jamarcus. I have a little bit of a personal story, and this goes into like a little bit of a debate. Is I used to call into talk radio here locally in Oklahoma City a lot. Back in that round, that like
that surprises everybody.
Yeah, sure. Oh, this guy wants to listen to himself yap, right? He has an opinion about something. So I used to call this one show. It was with Pat Jones, who's the old Oklahoma State head football coach. And he spent many, many years in the NFL as well. He was an assistant with Jimmy Johnson, I believe. Dolphins, maybe even the Cowboys. But Pat Jones has been around. And one day they were talking about Jamarcus Russell, and he kept talking about how talented Jamarcus Russell was and how he was blowing it. And I said, no. I called in. I said, Coach, you're wrong. Jamarcus Russell, that's the problem. He was not talented. He was a big guy who had good size and had some arm talent. He could throw the ball very far. Talent as a quarterback goes so far beyond athleticism. Talent is innate, right? It's something that these guys have. Like, why is Joe Montana better than other guys? It wasn't because Montana was bigger or faster or, you know, had twitchier muscles. We don't know why he was better necessarily. You know what I mean? We don't know. I know he worked hard and was smart, but a lot of guys work hard and are smart. Montana was talented. He had something that you can't define. He was born with some sort of gift to play the position that none of us understand, right? Mm-hmm. That's talent. Okay. Jamarcus Russell had none of it. Like zero. And like, he just was a guy that was big and strong and could throw the football 1,000 yards, and people got enamored with it. I don't know if he could ever play quarterback, actually play quarterback. So you get exposed very quickly in the NFL when all you are is an arm. You know what I mean? And that's it. Yeah, it's cool that you can throw the ball from your knees 85 yards or whatever, but that doesn't often happen, you know, in the course of an NFL game where that's going to be needed, right? So I got in a big argument. He called me an idiot, says I didn't know what I was talking about, but I maintained that I was correct. Shocker.
Yeah, I think his career, maybe for different reasons, almost had the same trajectory of maybe like Vince Williams or, Tim Vince Tebow. Vince Young or Tim Tebow, you know, who were, you know, maybe closer to Tebow because another guy that didn't have the best of arm but could run. But their NFL careers, they weren't great starting quarterbacks in the NFL. You know, it didn't translate from their college game up to there. But we said that, you know, maybe the last 10 years, the college game and the pro game running sort of the same offenses with the RPOs that the NFL has adopted, you know, learned from the college game. But back then, you know, they wanted pocket passers, and Jamarcus Russell definitely was not one of those.
No, he wasn't a great athlete. He didn't really run that much. Darren, he came to camp one time, they said, pushing 300 pounds. So, I mean, like, this is a guy that it's pretty clear he just didn't probably care very much either. So, you know, and see, you got to put the work in.
21, 22-year-old kids, though, too, coming in. So they're not the – sometimes the maturity level and your support groups that you have back at home maybe aren't the strongest and don't help you through that stuff. But
do your homework, listen to your coaches.
Right.
Think you know your football history? It's time to put your pads on with the Pigskin Trivia Drive. Choose your play, go for a run, short pass, or risk it all with a long pass. Answer fast to rack up the yardage and reach the yellow line for a first down and earn an audible to wipe away those wrong answers. But watch out, that play clock has gotcha. We got 25 seconds before the penalty hits. Score as many touchdowns as you can in 5 minutes and claim your spot on the global leaderboard. Pigskin Trivia Drive, where your football IQ is the MVP. Play now at pigskindispatch.com.
All right, let's get into some happier talk here. Who do you like? Yes, on your
top five? You know what? I at first I didn't know if I'd have this guy here, but I looked at it and looked at it. Number five, actually, my number five and number four are both playing still. Number five for me is Matthew Stafford, taken in 2009, of course, by the Lions. I think it's clear now. All he ever needed was just a little bit of help. That's all he ever needed, just a little bit of help. He's top 10 all time in yards and touchdowns in the history of the NFL now. And he's still going strong. He's still one of the top five-ish quarterbacks in the league. And as soon as he got to the Rams and Sean McVay, he went to another level after being excellent in Detroit and carrying that team as far as he possibly could. He's awesome. He has moved up the chart for me. And I think he's one of the best number one picks ever.
Yeah, I don't think there's any debate about that. Good selection. Who do you have next?
Another guy that's going strong, and it was taken much more recently. I got Myles Garrett at number four, taken in 2017. The Browns, of course, I think he's already an easy Hall of Famer. Retires tomorrow. He's in the Hall of Fame. He has two Defensive Player of the Year awards already. He could tie another guy we're going to talk about in a minute, and J.J. Watt as a three-time, or maybe he can become the first four-time, possibly. Mm-hmm. He is already in the top 20 of all-time sacks, and it's hard not to see him getting into the top five at least. Maybe he has an outside shot at number one. He needs about 75 more sacks. If he plays, if he can get about 12, 13 a year for X number of years, maybe he'll get there. But he, much like we talked about yesterday with Lawrence Taylor, is not just a pass rusher. He's a complete and total game wrecker everywhere across the field. He's everywhere. He is a dominant force. He is the most like LT that I've seen since LT. He's not LT. I'm not putting him quite there yet. Maybe if he does it like this for another 5 or 6 years, we'll start talking about that. And obviously he's a little bit buried because he's in the lousy organization where he's not getting the opportunity to play in big games. But I'm pretty sure if he did play in big games, we'd notice him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see with the defensive coordinator change that's going on in Cleveland. Will they remember how to use him the way that his coach has had the last few years? Because that's by far his best years, probably the last 3 or 4 seasons.
Yeah, I would say don't overthink it. Just say, Miles, go get them. That's all you get. That should be the scheme.
Yeah,
Miles, there you go. Miles, go. That's it.
All right, who do you have next?
I'll talk about a guy that could go. Number three, I've got Bruce Smith, drafted in 1985, the NFL's all-time leading sack leader. 19 years in the league. He had one injured season, and then his last year he didn't play a lot. But he basically played all the other seasons, pretty much all the way through. Three-time Defensive Player of the Year, tied with J.J. Watt for the most all-time. 11 All-Pro appearances, including 5 straight first team all pros, an absolute sack machine. He is the all-time leader with 200. He ended his career with the Redskins 4 years. He is not remembered there because the team wasn't great, but he was still good with the Redskins, at least those first 2 years he was there. I think he had 12 sacks 1 year, but he was good. He was a pretty good force. I wouldn't say that Bruce Smith was quite the sideline to sideline guy. He was a little bit more of that, like, kind of like pure D lineman edge guy. Mm-hmm. But in terms of that role, pretty much the best to ever do it.
Yeah, definitely. He was very strong on setting the edge. And maybe if you played in the era of the 3-4, maybe he would have even been more successful, having that that burst that he had. But definitely strong against the run and played the position well.
Yep, awesome player.
All right, so who do you have above him?
So 1 and 2 are both going to be quarterbacks, And I've got I kind of waffled a little bit, but I think I got pretty good reason. Number two, I've got Peyton Manning, drafted in 1998 by the Colts. I would say the most cerebral quarterback we've ever had. All of the pre-snaps, he was talk about a guy that. Okay, let's go back to this. Peyton Manning was insanely talented. He was not overly athletic. There is a difference. Peyton Manning had that something that he knew how to play quarterback better than just about everybody else. He didn't have great – he certainly wasn't quick. He couldn't run at all. And he didn't have a great arm, really, you know, especially later in his career. He beat you with his brain. He won the play before the ball was snapped. He knew where you were going to be. He knew where his guys were going to be. It didn't matter if he could zing it in there because he's going to get – he knows when to go. He had it all figured out. The Omaha stuff is funny, but it was also very much what made him him. So Peyton is the most cerebral quarterback of all time. I love the consistency with him. He didn't get hurt until the very end of his career there. You know, he wasn't great at the very end there in Denver. That defense kind of carried him over the finish line. Kind of made up, though, for some of the other Super Bowls he may have missed out on. So he kind of got that extra one at the end. But he was amazing. That first year in Denver is one of the greatest seasons in the history of offenses and the football and quarterbacks. What are you going to say about Peyton?
Yeah, definitely. We talked a little bit about him yesterday with the Ryan Leaf, who was going to go number one. But definitely, he didn't even have – I mean, he started right from day one, and people sort of – we're a little bit worried about him. I think he had an interception one of his first couple passes and didn't have a great start, but I think he learned from that. And you talked about the cerebral part of his game. He learned from his mistakes, and he usually didn't make it that same mistake again. And he would figure out, studying film study and, the hours he spent, the training he got from his very famous father and the whole family of quarterbacks have come since. Just a tremendous player and one of the best quarterbacks all time in NFL history.
Absolutely. But all he's right. Not number one on our list.
All right. So who is number one?
I guess maybe this is the 80s child in me, but I've got John Elway taken in 1983 as the number one, the best number one draft pick of all time. If you look up the numbers and forget about eras and all of that kind of stuff, Elway, is going to be more like top 15 in a lot of these categories when it comes to touchdowns and yards and things like that. He's passed by a lot of the more modern era quarterbacks who put up some little bit bigger numbers. But I think we're all smart enough and intuitive enough and have watched enough football to know when a guy's got it. And Elway had it. He always had it. He got those Broncos teams in the 80s as far as they could possibly go. They lost those Super Bowls because they didn't really belong on the same field with those NFC teams. That was in an era when the NFC completely dominated from like the early to mid 80s to the mid 90s. Complete dominance by the NFC. Those teams were so much better. There was very little that Elway could do once he got to those games. That always kind of hung over him. People said, I can't win the big one. No one could have beaten the big one. No quarterback was beating the 86 Giants or the 89 49ers. My God, that team was unbelievable. That wasn't happening. And he also lost one to the Redskins, of course, and Joe Gibbs when his defense gave up 35 points in a quarter. So, there's just not a lot of answer for that. He was fun. He was an athlete ahead of his time. In terms of being able to run the ball, extend plays, he was Captain Clutch, of course, with the drive, and there were so many more instances. And then it was great for me personally. I don't think he wouldn't have needed the two Super Bowls at the end for me to put him on number one on this list, but that definitely cemented it, and I think stamped it. Like, okay, he got the two rings, and the first one they got because of him when he was still a great player and the MVP and all that kind of stuff. So it was nice that he finally got the rings to validate that long career. Elway was awesome, Darren. He's always going to be near the top of my list. of the all-time great quarterbacks. Probably wouldn't have him quite with Brady and Mahomes and Montana, but he's probably four for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like them, the two that you have being number one and number two, and kind of ironic that they were both drafted by the Colts and later played for the Broncos.
Right.
Both Manning and Elway. Of course, Elway's the famous thing, never really played for the Colts, was drafted by them. Right. Much very similar to Peyton's brother, Eli, didn't want to play for the team he was drafted on either. But, you know, I might have Manning over Elway, and because I think if you were going to go the top five quarterbacks of all time, I'm not sure Elway makes that top five, but Manning definitely is on there just by the success at the quarterback position. And I know you're weighing it from looking at the 80s where, you know, Elway played quite a bit of his career, different era of, you know, passing the ball in the NFL. But I think Manning sort of transcends that because he was that good and at that accurate. And, you know, they both had two Super Bowls. Manning did it with two different teams. You know, just the years that he set like the touchdown record. You know, that was just unbelievable. That something that I don't believe that Elway ever did. So I think as a pure quarterback who didn't have any tools other than his brain and his arm, because he wasn't going to hurt you with his legs. We know that from the Manning brothers, anyway. But I think I still might have Manning a notch ahead of Elway on that list.
I'll throw one counter back at you, and then we'll talk about the prime of their careers. So Peyton had Edgerrin James, gold jacket. Marvin Harrison, gold jacket. Reggie Wayne, going to be a gold jacket. Dallas Clark, not a gold jacket, but one heck of a player. Go back to the 80s. You might not be able to name the other skill position players that Elway played with. You know, we're talking Vance Johnson. You know, is that the best? You know, like, gosh, the running backs, can they name Steve Sewell? You know, like, it's hard to even remember. Now, at the very end of his career there, he certainly had Terrell Davis, and that was a major boost for LA and probably helped them finally get over the top. But from the majority of his career, he was everything. He was the only guy. Now, he wound up with Rod Smith later, you know, too, and McCaffrey. So later in his career, he did have some nice talent around him, Shannon Sharp. But for the meat of his career, he was a solo act.
Well, I could counter that too a little bit. Sometimes it takes that quarterback to groom his playmakers into being playmakers and lead them by not only passing or sharper routes or whatever, you know, whatever they're discussing. I think that's another area I think maybe Manning has a little bit of an edge on, because you hear stories all the time of him, like when he went to the Broncos, he developed the offense. He was the offensive coordinator, basically. They developed that offense off of what he had done in the past. And I think that's that part, that much of the game, and being that good of a quarterback at the position, signal caller, the field general, the, you know, running it, putting his team into audibles to get him out of trouble. I think all of that sort of puts him in that category. Like I said, just a notch above where I would put Elway.
Fair. I'll leave it with this. I will give Manning the nod as the better SNL host. And I will say that Elway was the better quarterback.
Okay. Well, we can agree to disagree on that. Okay. But we had many other Hall of Famers on here. You know, we told you the other night that you know, the number three pick had 15. That was our record. Well, number one has 14 Hall of Famers so far. So maybe someday they will pass the number three pick. We have some players that we did not talk about. Earl Campbell, 1978 with the Oilers. Leroy Selman, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 76. Then we had 3 years in a row, 68 through 70. That was Ron Yeary with Minnesota in 68, O.J. Simpson and Terry Bradshaw in 1970 with the Steelers, Paul Hornung in 1957 with the Packers, Chuck Bednarek, Philadelphia, 1949, Charlie Trippi by the Cardinals in 45, Bullet Bill Dudley by the Steelers in 1942, so 13 in all, and some great players there back in the history, first 45 years of the draft. The draft stat of the day, or I'm sorry, the most popular position is a no-brainer. It's quarterback by far. We still see that to this day. That's the premier position as where teams want to draft. But draft stat of the day has the Indianapolis Colts and the LA Rams are tied for the most overall first picks in the NFL draft. Each franchise has had seven times. The Colts in 67, 83, 90, 92, 98, and 2012. You could count that maybe an eighth one in 1955, but it was a different version of the Colts that we talked about earlier. The Rams had it 38, 52, 60, 63, 97, 2010, and 2016. One of those 1938, they were the Cleveland Rams when they did that. And of course, 97, I believe they were the St. Louis Rams. But, you know, so just some things. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are in a close third. They have had five times in the top spot. I was surprised I did not see maybe perhaps the Cleveland Browns or the Cincinnati Bengals or Detroit Lions in there, but they were not. They were not even in the top three. So
they've made a history of being the second worst team every year.
Maybe. They may be a number two pick. They have the most. Right. So, Ed, you know, this has been a great journey here. I know you have a couple of closing thoughts you want to say here.
I do. This has been so fun, first of all. And, you know, we've done this for 32 days in a row. And I know for both of us, while these podcasts were somewhere anywhere between about 15 and 25 minutes, something like that, it's been a lot more time of research and looking things up, for sure. It's been a lot of fun. But I had a couple of final bullet points that I've – some observations that I've learned over this time that maybe I didn't really realize. I've always been like a take the best player available kind of guy. But after looking at this, Darren, I am 100% about that now. Because what we see is, even with the number one pick in the draft, our average was average, meaning there was just as many misses as hits. And then with the farther away you get from number one, the more that skews to the misses. So there just aren't necessarily that many players available in any given year that are going to really help your team. So if you get locked into a position or a need, or you're drafting because it's a good fit with your coach or your GM or something like that, you're making a mistake, because you need to make a pick of the, I would ask yourself this: which player has the best chance to go to the Hall of Fame? Take that player. And don't worry about your coach or your GM, because you want that player to outlive them, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times these teams have pigeonholed themselves into drafting for positional needs or draft analysis or whatever, and they pass up on sort of the obvious in front of them. Or, you know, we're not going to take Luke Kuechly because we don't need a linebacker. Well, who doesn't need Luke Kuechly, right? Just take that guy. So that's my first observation. The second one is something we talked about. There's a big drop-off after the early teens. So we saw very little difference in the historical outcome of drafts from like the 14th pick through like the 32nd pick. So if your team's trading down, I'd be very wary to trade down too far, because you're going to get yourself into that no man's land where there's not much difference between 15 and 31. You know, that's kind of what we're seeing. I'd say positional differences too stood out, meaning if you take a good quarterback 10th overall, it's probably a pretty good pick that's going to help your team. You take a good offensive guard 10th overall, you probably made a mistake. That guard probably needs to be great in order to justify that position. So that's something that was kind of consistent that I noticed. The same teams popped up a lot. The Browns and the Jets, of course, kind of like in the misses. We saw the Ravens and Steelers and Patriots a lot on the good side. Makes perfect sense, right? One team that really stuck out to me was we saw the Dolphins have drafted horribly. And that kind of explains it. You know, you talk about teams that haven't had any success. Well, there you go. And then missing on a top 10 quarterback is just deadly. Because what happens is not only does he not help you, but you've invested. So you usually stick with it longer than you probably should. And that's just a deadly, deadly miss. And then I've got one more thing, Darren. It's my kind of like dirty little secret, I guess, maybe. And do you like movies that have like a twist at the end, like The Sixth Sense, or like maybe for you, maybe The Crying Game is more your speed. You know, do you like movies that have like an unexpected ending?
I do enjoy those. I think I don't know the many people that don't like those.
Because I've got an unexpected ending maybe for you. When it comes to me in the NFL draft, we've just spent 32 days talking about it every single day, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a television show, I don't really like it. I think it's kind of – I think the draft is an overrated event. I think it's a lot of bluster. I think it's a lot of talk. And I think what we've proven over these 32 days is that nobody knows what the hell they're talking about. No clue. We're just all blabbing. They're reading names on a state. The guys are walking over. They're hugging the commissioner. Everybody's excited. Nobody has a damn clue what's going to happen with any of these guys. Everybody is talking out of their rear ends. No one knows. I don't know. You don't know. Kuiper doesn't know. The GMs don't know. The coaches don't know.
It's one of the most covert operations in the world at this time. You know, people aren't squealing.
It's so much luck. It's so much luck. We don't know what we're talking about. And I actually kind of find the event itself a little boring and the analysis over the top. And I find myself every year going, okay, here we go. You're going to tell me what this great steal that they got in the fifth round, taking this outside linebacker from Arkansas State. I want to be like, time out. You got no clue, man. We're probably never going to hear that guy's name ever again. This is it. They'll never need, you
know. I enjoy it. I love flipping between the stations. And maybe you can't do it anymore because ESPN now runs NFL Network. So maybe we lose some of that. But I love doing that, or going to my local station and listening to what my local talking heads are saying about my team and things like that. But I think the biggest part of this journey that I learned about is really how hard it is to get in the Hall of Fame. You know, I was expecting, I never really looked at it in perspective. I was expecting like the number one pick that there would be, you know, 50% of them being, but the highest we had was 15 people out of 90 drafts. So that's about, you know, 18% of the time the best draft has had, you know, only 18% of their people make it into the Hall of Fame so far. And I don't think it's going to get much better than that over the years. You know, maybe we'll have maybe one position will get a 20% or something, but remember, we keep adding draft years on. This will be the 91st draft coming up. It's hard to get in the Hall of Fame, and players have to be really good or have something really special or have a little bit of luck on their side with some voters that are, you know, maybe twisting things we talked a little bit about, but it's still hard to get in Canton.
Yeah. And that stuck out too. That's a really good point, was that, you know, it was really surprising for me to see the lack of true hits of like the, you know, I thought there'd be more kabooms or like, oh man, this year we had 8 guys in a row that, you know, almost went to the Hall of Fame. It does not happen. Yeah. It did not. And then I told you, we had some picks where I was shocked at how underwhelming the top 5 was. You know what, yeah, I was scrambling to find it. It's a tough deal. Nobody knows what they're talking about. Take the best player available, cross your fingers, and hope you get it right.
Yep. Well, it has been fun, my friend. I appreciate the great idea you had. We've put a lot of work into this and had a lot of fun, and hopefully the viewers have enjoyed it too. And, you know, it's evergreen, and people can listen to this all year long, and not just about the draft. It's about some legendary players more so than anything. So appreciate the time you put into it and the effort and the idea.
Well, I always appreciate the time, Darren. It was a lot of fun, and we'll come up with something new for the next thing. Maybe we'll do 32 days of schedule talk before it comes out. How's that?
maybe you might have the wrong host.
Okay, gotcha.
All right. All right. Good.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones, too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.